preview this hour, so I hope you are able to stay tuned and listen to all of it, or as much of it as you can. And of course, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. And if you or somebody you know lives in Urbana, you can let them know or remind them that tomorrow, Tuesday, February 23rd, they have a primary in Urbana. For more information about who will be on the ballot and who is running for which public office, you can go to the League of Women's Voters in Champaign. If you would like the website, it is lwvchampaigncounty.org. That's all one word. Again, www.lwvchampaigncounty.org, or you could just Google League of Women Voters Champaign. There's also votechampaign.org, so that's all one word, votechampaign.org or .org. And of course, there's the Champaign County Clerk website, which I believe is just Google. If you would like, you can just Google Champaign County Clerk. I believe the website is champaigncountyclerk.com. Go to champaigncountyclerk.com. So Champaign County Clerk, it's all one word. And then you click on election. There's an election option that you should see on the webpage. And again, tomorrow, Tuesday, February 23rd, is the primary in the city of Urbana. What you're about to hear next is the People's City Council meeting that dealt with about closing gaps in domestic violence survivor support. So I just want to give a warning to our audience. If this is subject material is hard to listen to, then please feel free to turn off the channel or listen to something else. But this is something I felt, a very important subject. I know it's also a very difficult subject to talk about. These are important issues that we do need to talk about, but obviously for some people, it is a difficult subject. So just wanted to give a warning to our audience about that. This is the People's City Council meeting that took place last week.
Tonight's topic focuses on domestic violence, which may be triggering for some viewers and participants. While we try our best to avoid graphic details, there may be some things that are upsetting due to the nature of tonight's topic. We believe that as difficult as these conversations are, it's important to address this issue and facilitate open conversation. And now for the sample legislation. Whereas nationally, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men have experienced some form of domestic violence in their lifetime. And whereas women, particularly Black, Indigenous, and people of color, are disproportionately impacted by domestic violence and the long-term adverse physical and mental health consequences. And whereas many cases of domestic violence are reported to friends or family, yet only 21% of female victims and 6% of male victims disclosed their victimization to a doctor or nurse at some point in their lifetime. And most cases of domestic violence goes unreported to the police. And whereas Champaign County, as of 2015, has the 4th highest rate of domestic crime in the state of Illinois, more than double the state average, and with 2,800 calls per year related to domestic violence, reportedly, the police's number one call for service, and whereas 22% of community members over the age of 18 and experiencing homelessness in 2018 self-identified as survivors of domestic violence, and whereas state law requires a tenant who is a domestic violence survivor to wait 48 hours to change locks unless the landlord provides permission, and whereas crucial shelter services such as Courage Connection are available to domestic violence survivors who meet the definition of fleeing domestic violence, and be it therefore resolved, we support increasing the accessibility of domestic abuse survivor services and expanding protections for domestic abuse survivors. Now on to our candidate comments. Because there are so many of us, and because we are inviting the community to participate in a 30-minute Q&A, each candidate will have 2 minutes to speak about the resolution, the community feedback they've gotten, and anything else they want to say about closing gaps in domestic violence survivor support. First, Christopher Hansen, candidate for Ward 2 of Urbana.
Good evening. I'm kind of glad that I'm going first because this is definitely not a subject that I consider myself to be an expert on, and I think some of the other people here are going to be much more informative voices than my own, but I'll try to say some things that I think are useful. And one of the first things that comes to mind is that it doesn't seem like politicians like talking about this issue, and that there's a serious stigma problem related to domestic violence that may need to be solved or real progress can be made at a governmental level. And, you know, maybe we're solving it by having meetings just like this. That stigma issue is very concerning, and it also maybe starts to explain why we see such significant underreporting of this. And my immediate inclination is to talk about the police and the hesitancy for people to want to call the police for this type of issue when they clearly don't know how to handle it. And even the police themselves say that they're not trained to do this kind of thing. So there's no question about that. So it seems to me, and I think everyone else is probably going to mirror this, is the police need to get out of this as much as possible. And my concern is that a push to do that just results in something that looks exactly like the police that is just rebranded. And I think that's not what is going to help. And so someone pointed out to me earlier today, because I was asking them about domestic violence, that they noticed that there didn't seem to be much of anything in the new Front Door program that seemed to address domestic violence. And that hadn't happened to me before. So I guess the next thing I'll say is, I think bringing the right voices forward is extremely important. And I kind of know that's not really my voice, but that's going to be one of the most important things we do is bring the voices forward to talk about this.
Thank you, Christopher Hansen. Next, we have Colin Dodson, candidate for Ward 2 of Urbana.
Hi, thank you. Again, I'm really not the most qualified person to speak here, but what I can say is that there's a reason for the choice of the three topics that we're discussing as part of the People's City Council, which is to say that issues of housing justice, of criminal injustice in this country, and providing the support necessary to survivors of domestic violence and abuse are deeply interconnected issues. You know, for one thing, the lack of guaranteed stable housing for all people is a major contributor to the prevalence of domestic violence and is a huge reason why so many people do not, you know, are not able to leave abusive situations like that. And fundamentally, you know, we're talking about when we look at the action conclusion of the resolution, you may notice that there's not a specific singular policy that we're pushing for. And I think that that's appropriate. But we need to remember that this is a long-term commitment, that in order to really address domestic violence, that requires a very deep, ongoing work within the community. And it's not just one thing that's going to solve domestic violence as an issue in our community. We need to, first of all, ensure that survivors can get to safety, right? And then beyond that, we have to start looking at why it is that abuse and predation and violence is reproduced time and time again in our society. So ultimately, we need a social transformation or reconstruction. Thank you.
Thank you, Colin Dodson. Unfortunately today, Deborah Liu is not with us today. However, we do have a statement that she has provided in result of this situation that we're discussing.
Does someone want to read Deborah's statement? If not, I can do it.
I have her statement. So this is from Deborah Liu. Domestic violence is intractably tied to the issues of economic and housing insecurity. Individuals who are trapped in abusive relationships, they feel they have nowhere else to go. In these three-part series, we have seen how the issues are all related. A victim of domestic violence will be trapped if they are otherwise housing insecure, and they are among the populations most likely to have dangerous encounters with the police. An equitable society, by definition, must protect and provide opportunity for the most vulnerable, including victims of domestic violence. Thank you.
Thank you, Rita Connolly, reading that for Deborah Liu, candidate for Ward 3 of Urbana. Next, we have Megan McDonald, candidate for Ward 5 of Urbana.
Hi, all. It's nice to see you again for this People's City Council Forum. My name is Megan McDonald, and I'm running for Urbana City Council, Ward 5. Just a reminder, thanks to you in the audience for attending and to you all here, proud of us for getting through it and all agreeing that ending chronic homelessness, defunding the police, and looking to provide domestic violence survivor support are all ideas that we support as candidates. I want to thank Courage Connection for providing us with materials, both in English and Spanish. I want to thank the press for showing up and helping amplify this message. I want to start out by saying that domestic violence is a crisis. Domestic violence is defined by Courage Connections as a pattern of coercive control that one person exercises over another. On their website, they list types of abuse. Physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, and economic abuse are just the top four, which I thought was interesting to note. Get back to my statement. It's a mental health crisis. It's a public health crisis. The police are called to a domestic dispute almost every day in Urbana, just by a look at the recent media reports on the city government's website. More often than not, it's because of rent money. Domestic violence is on the rise because of the pandemic, people being isolated with their partners or roommates or parents. It's on the rise because people cannot meet their basic needs. It's on the rise because people are unaccepted for who they are and have nowhere else to go. I hope that even, you know, to mimic what Chris said, that even just having this conversation today helps some people, because while this is a mock event for candidates, and for you all in the audience to get to know us a little bit more, I do believe that this is what the government should do with our tax dollars, help people be connected to resources as quickly and often as possible. I know I'm running out of time. I think amplifying this and people's first policies like public housing, defunding the police, we could put money towards people's actual needs, food, housing, mental health services. If we funded those needs, I bet we would get less calls to the police. And I think that we should have a separate number for domestic violence situations. And I'll end there.
Thank you, Megan McDonald. Next, we have Grace Wilkin, candidate for Ward 6 of Urbana.
Thank you, Justin, and thank you everyone watching and commenting. This is a very difficult and very important issue to address. Domestic violence, for me, boils down to an unsafe home, and that makes people extremely vulnerable to physical, mental, and emotional harm. I think that we need education to prevent domestic violence, education about consent, healthy versus unhealthy relationships, how to express and deal with emotions. While I was at Central High School as a student, I attended a workshop on healthy versus abusive relationships, mostly just to get out of class at the time, but it turned out to be really enlightening, and I realized that I hadn't really learned about or experienced many healthy relationships and what that really looks like. I think we also need education and job training and job access for everyone, but especially women, and especially women of color. People, often women, are forced to stay in unhealthy, sometimes dangerous relationships because of economic dependence, as people have brought up, with the only alternative being to face homelessness or housing instability a lot of the times. I think that we need to reduce the barriers to housing, education, and career opportunities, like cost, childcare, safety, mental health services, transportation, and all the other things that could be a barrier. I think that we also need to address how we respond to domestic violence. It's the number one call for police in Champaign-Urbana, and it's often re-traumatizing and only a reactional system. It doesn't prevent domestic violence. And there's so many instances where people who need help don't feel safe to call the police. People of color, people with mental challenges, people without legal status, people who identify as LGBTQ, or for any other number of reasons. I think there's other examples of places where they've replaced or supplemented police with social workers or other professionals to respond to domestic violence. And I think that we need to look into that to address it on a systemic level. And when we break down the silence and the stigma around domestic violence, to acknowledge when it happens and address it in a meaningful way that's not re-traumatizing and helps to heal all parties to avoid it from happening again. So I think this resolution is a good small step for us saying that we're committed towards working on this issue of domestic violence in our community.
Thank you, Grace Wilkin. Next, we have Andy Ma, candidate for mayor of Urbana.
Hello, everybody. Domestic violence is a major issue in our community, and the local government has not been taking it seriously. I think that there's much we can do to listen to the perspectives of survivors and provide the resources that they need. And I think that this conference is a step in the right direction, showing that we do take domestic violence seriously and we'll do all we can to help survivors.
Thank you, Andy Ma. Next, we have Rita Connerly, candidate for Township Supervisor of Champaign.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you all for participating in this very important topic. It is a very sensitive issue, and as a person who has firsthand experienced domestic violence, I am so happy that we are here as a panel and progressives who are interested in becoming a part of our city governments so that we can take some lead and action as it relates to domestic violence victims, survivors, and the supports therefore for them. Domestic violence is the number one call received here in Champaign-Urbana. Nationally, 1 in 4 homeless women or victims, are homeless due to domestic violence against them. So now is the ideal time to form positive relationships that we can show and share to others. Domestic violence, also referred to oftentimes as intimate partner violence, dating abuse, or relationship abuse, is a pattern of behaviors used by one partner to maintain power and control over another. So I think one of the first things that we need to do is understand what domestic violence is. Domestic violence doesn't discriminate. Anyone of any race, gender, sexuality, religion, educational level, or economic status can be a victim or a perpetrator. Understanding domestic violence means that there's also levels to it. It doesn't necessarily mean physical harm. It also means intimidation, manipulation, control of a partner, or otherwise forcing them to behave in ways in which we want them to or the perpetrator wants them to. This includes through ways of physical violence, threats, emotional abuse, financial control, and other forms of control. So I think one of the first things that we as a community can do is support victims in their abuse and making sure that they know help is available to them. Recognizing abuse is the first step and also one of the hardest. Again, as a person who was in a domestic violence situation for a decade of my life, I didn't realize how bad it was on the inside. And you don't realize it. You learn more about power and control in abusive relationships as an outsider. So I could identify in friendships, relationships, bad relationships or bad behaviors, but yet in my own, that was something that was difficult for me to recognize. And I think that recognizing is one of the first things. And how we can do that is we can start educating a little bit earlier and fostering healthy relationships. I recall when my eldest son was in high school, he partook in a program called Care for You, which fostered healthy relationships, because we often find, like I stated, domestic abuse doesn't discriminate and it's starting younger. I just would encourage that as we continue to delve on this conversation, that we not only think about the victims and the perpetrators, but we extend that into the families. As a result of domestic violence, my children were byproducts. And while I did go through the courts and, you know, through the proper procedures in order to provide protections for myself, I used the resources that were available to me by my family and by my friends. I didn't know of our domestic violence house here. And when I did reach out, they were to capacity. So there was not even an option for help for me there. I also reached out to school services and social service agencies, which again redirected me to the Courage Connection Center here. And again, it was just like going into a brick wall. There was no support services. So I think, again, as we continue to talk about domestic violence, we need to consider the children, the families, the friends that are also impacted, because domestic violence, the physical component is typically the last component of the abuse. So I'm happy to continue to discuss this this topic with panelists who are just as excited to learn more on how we can solve or at least try to solve the issues with it. But police as a solution, that's not going to solve domestic violence. It only contributes to additional trauma. Thank you.
Thank you, Rita Connerly. Next, we have Clarissa Nickerson-Foreman, incumbent and candidate for District 1 of Champaign.
I want to start just by saying, you know, I don't have all the answers and I don't pretend to, but I do think that domestic violence is a huge problem. I know that I like to talk facts. I enjoy facts. I think facts is the best way to talk about things. By facts, I mean the number one call for service in the city of Champaign is domestic violence. The number one call for service in Garden Hills is domestic violence. So we know that police are being called to these homes, but we don't necessarily know the outcome. You know, are these families put with services? Are the women, you know, given opportunities for self-sufficiency? Or is always the option, let me put you in a shelter, let me move you from where you are and put you somewhere else? And so I think that when we talk about it in that way, it makes you wonder, you know, what else can we do so that that experience potentially leaving somewhere difficult is easier for women and seeking help. Because I recall we had a city council call a couple weeks ago where someone got on and they made a joke or a jab saying, well, you know, how dare you call the police about a man jumping on you and then be talking about defunding the police? You can seek help for domestic violence and still be against the police. And I did not like that. And that was something that rubbed me the wrong way, because we have lost a Black woman, several Black women to domestic violence recently. And the pain that people that are left behind who feel they didn't do enough or they could have did more. I just want that to be, you know, people to understand that's real. And, you know, everybody would tell you they would do something differently if, but what can we do as a community to educate that seeking help is good? It's good to seek help, and it's good to embrace people who seek help. And one thing I would like to address that really concerns me, especially when we talk about women and seeking out orders of protection, there is some type of stigma about seeking an order of protection. Or, you know, the main thing that concerns me is if you seek an order of protection, it's there publicly. So even if I'm trying to hide from my abuser, everybody knows that I'm trying to hide from my abuser. And that's concerning. And I think that's something, you know, if we're going to talk about change of policy or something, let's change some policy to give some people some privacy as they seek help. You know, so again, I don't have all the answers, but those are some suggestions I think that would be good to, you know, put out. And I would love to hear what everybody else has to say. I know that a lot of people are uncomfortable with it, but I'm glad you all came to the table to talk about it. So I appreciate you all.
Thank you, Clarissa Nickerson Foreman. I am Justin Michael Hendricks, your write-in candidate for District 3 of Champaign. First and foremost, I want to thank everyone for being here in this space. I know in these matters, when it's coming to moments of triggering situations and trying times and knowing that the territories that we are entering and engaging in, we know that it's always good to take knowledge and also be accepting to the situations and have compassion into knowing that these are situations that we cannot tread lightly with. These are things that we must take with great cause and great impact, and knowing that things must change. And like Clarissa and everyone else is working off of, we work off facts and truth. With that being said, 54% of Black trans women experience some form of intimate partner violence. That includes being coerced or pushed or even shoved into having sexual intercourse and then resulting in domestic violence. We know that 40% of Black women experience domestic violence in a lifetime. So that means even in Champaign currently, we recently had the unfortunate passing and murder of Tanisha Jenkins. We need to start establishing legislation that's protecting women, such as the Tanisha Jenkins Act, Safety Protections Act for women, especially Black women when it comes to domestic violence, because I'm pretty sure most of those calls are from Black women. Also, we know that 26% of Black gay men and 37.3% of Black bisexual men also experience domestic partner violence as well. Also, we know that 27% of disabled people also are experiencing domestic violence as well in their relationships, whether it's a caretaker or an intimate partner. So we also have to be mindful of those situations too when we're reaching out to these demographics. Another thing, 56% of young people, that means between the ages of 15 and 18, are experiencing domestic violence in their relationships too. So that means that these things are triggering down through generations, through families, through friends. We have to start having the conversations and changing things up, making sure that we're implementing things to change, protecting people at all times, and make sure domestic violence doesn't exist anymore. I'm Justin Michael Hendricks. I thank you all. And now as we move forward, thank you all. Do I have a motion to approve the resolution?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Next, we will have the candidate vote, starting with Christopher Hansen, candidate for Ward 2 of Urbana. Colin Dotson, candidate for Ward 2 of Urbana.
Yes.
Megan McDonald, candidate for Ward 5 of Urbana. Grace Wilkins, candidate for Ward 6 of Urbana. Andy Ma, candidate for mayor of Urbana.
Yes.
Rita Connerly, candidate for township supervisor of Champaign.
Yes.
Clarissa Nickerson Foreman, incumbent and candidate for District 1 of Champaign.
Yes.
And I am Justin Michael Hendricks, your write-in candidate for District 3 of Champaign, and I am a yes. Next, we have our Q&A section. We are taking questions live from the chat box during this session and series, and we welcome you all to please comment and ask questions, and we will make sure that we fill them to everyone so they can answer them.
Don't think there are any questions yet, which is fine. Maybe Chris has one.
Go ahead, Chris.
So something that I've been thinking about a lot is how to bring traumatized voices where they need to be. which is to, I guess, policymakers or people who are going to do something about it. And I don't have an answer to that question. So maybe you guys can give me a response. When someone's traumatized, they're almost by definition debilitated in some way, and their ability to function, you know, especially in like a technical government kind of setting, is severely diminished because they're traumatized. So what I'm asking you, what kind of response do you have for that? How do we bring a traumatized voice forward so that the right people hear the right things?
I think one of the biggest things, Chris, just to kick it off for everybody else, I think a really big thing is going to be people being able to be in those spaces to do it. And I think that there's a huge stigma in going back, right? So say I called and I tried to get help and I went back. I have 6 kids, right? So if you go back, then there's the stigma of, well, I went back, and how do I tell people that I'm strong, because I know I need to leave, but I'm weak in, you know. So if you can't tell that to your family and friends, I don't know how you can, you know, tell that to legislators, mostly because patriarchy, I hate that word, but I think you guys know what I mean. But our laws tell us how we feel about women. And, you know, the way we don't do anything about rape cases, the way we, you know, there's a guy who raped a girl in the back alley and got 3 months, you know, probation suspended, right? Because he, you know, her legs weren't closed. You know, the conversations that men have like that, devaluing women. So domestic violence isn't taken seriously. And I think that, you know, it's going to take more women in spaces who are willing to listen. Because I think trauma, and I think pretty much anybody in here can understand, a person who, you know, is scared of court isn't going to go to a courthouse, right? So how do you, you know, make more courage connections? How do we make more rape crisis centers, right? Because those people are trained to deal with them. And a lot of people don't realize we had a really amazing rape crisis women advocacy group over on Ray Street in Urbana. No, that's not the right street. Wait a minute. The one that runs by the courthouse. I don't go over there enough. I'm sorry, y'all. I want to say Main Street, but it was on the left-hand side and it closed a few years ago. And that the ramifications of that, most people haven't realized, but Courage Connection is overloaded. And so, you know, getting the legislatures and people who write the checks to see the value in healing women, if that makes any sense. Is anybody following me here? Okay, I hope I'm not going too far, but I hope I answered your question, Chris, or at least got your brain thinking a little bit, you know.
Sorry, Rita, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead, Colin.
Okay, so there are two things that kind of come to mind, which is that, so one is going back to a point you raised earlier, Chris, about like ending stigma, and that is important, but it's not just stigma. There's also legitimate fear that, you know, when you come forward and challenge someone who has shown a capacity to inflict harm, there's a very real fear of retribution, that if the effort to address that harm fails, that harm will escalate, right? Or even that the people that you're going to, that you feel should be trying to help you, that they may harm you in some way, right? And that happens all the time in, you know, in our the systems around us. The other like huge point I think that will require a cultural shift is I really think that we need to de-emphasize, you know, a personal moral understanding of it, all these kinds of issues, to recognize structural and systemic roots. And what I mean by that is, under no circumstances should anyone ever be faulted for suffering abuse, right? And a big part of why, you know, there's this like victim blaming and like flipping the narrative and gaslighting and all of this is that so much of our moral fabric and philosophy in the society that we live in is based on construing every problem in the world as an individual personal moral problem, that, you know, that in some way, if you weren't able to get out of a situation, well, you weren't good enough, that's your fault, blah 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 blah, when no, that's not it. Like underneath all sorts of different, you know, the ways that people think don't come out of nowhere. They come out of the conditions that we exist in.
I have to stop it there, but if you would like, you can watch the whole event on the Facebook page of Central Illinois News. Just look at go on the video discussion, the People's City Council on those subjects. And I believe they have they have a few of the People's City Council meetings, some public service announcements. Guests are actively participating in case management services and working toward finding more stable housing options. Crisis Nursery is another option. Crisis Nursery is the only emergency-based child care facility open 24 hours, 365 days a year, serving ages birth through 6 years. It is open for the entire community to access with no fees or income eligibility. Besides safe shelter for children, family support and parenting education are provided. Families who may be experiencing a crisis are welcome to call the phone number 217-337-2730. Again, that phone number is 217-337-2730 to begin the process of scheduling care for their child or children. There is also Austin's Place, which is a women's only shelter. Austin's Place provides overnight emergency shelter for women year-round. Intakes are from 8 p.m. to 7 p.m. and are available throughout the night. New facilities, including showers and laundry, are now available. If you need the address is 504 North Market Street. Again, the address is 504 North Market Street in Champaign. For more information, contact Ruth Moore. The phone number is 217-356-9078. Again, that phone number is 217-356-9078. There is also the Men's Emergency Shelter, which provides, again, year-round, 365 days a year, and same hours, 8 p.m. to 7 a.m. Service provides at CU at Home, the address is 70 East Washington Street in Champaign, the former Times Center location. Showers and laundry are available, and the phone number to contact is 217-819-4569. It's the Men's Emergency Shelter, 217-819-4569. Also, another phone number is 217-649-2200. Again, that phone number is 217-649-2200. The Men's Emergency Shelter, located at 70 East Washington Street, the former Times Center location. I am talking with Clarissa Nickerson-Foreman. She is the city council representing District 1. Now, Clarissa, you were, I believe, appointed to serving the district in June 16th, 2015. Then you won in April 2017. I guess first, you know, if you kind of want to introduce yourself, talk about your district, your background, anything that you think would be relative important for the audience here at WEF to know about you.
Well, my name is Clarissa Nickerson-Foreman, and I've represented District 1 for 6 years. I was appointed to the city council, which I like to joke is, you know, it's much harder to get 9 people to vote for you, 8 people to vote for you than it is to get hundreds, right? So I always joke about that. And then I was reelected in 2017 for a full term, which was mine. And really, I have enjoyed serving the residents of District 1 because of the versatility and the diversity. I have, you know, the north end of Champaign, I have campus, and I have a part of downtown, which, you know, gives me a wide variety of topics that I face and deal with constituents. But also, most people don't realize this, but 99% of my job is actually the entire city, because we rarely vote on things or work on things in our own districts. Typically, we are voting on citywide issues. So, you know, being up to date and understanding what's going on and being informed about what's going on in the community is something I've committed myself to for 6 years. And if given a chance to do it for another 4 years, I would continue to do that.
And what are some of the maybe issues, or if you kind of want to talk about what's been some of kind of the big issues you've been bringing up in your campaign or that you really want to work on if you are elected? And are there any kind of couple of big issues that you kind of really want to bring attention to? I know this past week, I aired some of it, was the People's City Council meeting. I know they focused on policing and also as things like housing, you know, and we could, yeah, delve more into that. I just kind of brought those up as examples. But is there anything that you want to bring focus on and on what you're, if elected city council? I hope that question kind of.
Yeah, it makes sense. I really would like to focus on, you know, if I'm reelected, I would really like to focus on, you know, infrastructure in my district. A lot of people talk about Garden Hills and the drainage district, but they don't remember that my district also encompasses, you know, Louisiana, Alabama Avenue, Mittendorf, the Garden Park neighborhood. And those neighborhoods have started to also slip down. And, you know, the Neal Street Corridor project was a big chunk of a project that we've been working on that I really believe as we work on the Neal Street Corridor, those things around them will be, you know, will be uplifted. And I think it's important that we do that because the Martin Center is coming on Market Street soon. Bristol Place has been completely renovated. So the neighborhood to the right of it, or to the west, as you'll say in geographical terms, is Garwood. And Garwood is going to slip down while, you know, Bristol Place is this brand new building, this brand new, you know, infrastructure. And Shadowwood, you know, we need to have more infrastructure in that trailer park for the immigrants who live there and for people who don't necessarily have a voice to speak up. And, you know, one of the things that's going to be important is adding a pedestrian crossing across Market, because if we're going to make a park with the center where we have the Boys and Girls Club in it, and we're going to need something to protect those kids going across, you know, Market Street. So those are some of the things that I would like to, you know, do. You know, working with the police department and changing how we do things at the police department is essential for the people who I represent. We are impacted by violence and shootings, and, you know, so what goes on at the police department directly affects us more than it affects anyone else. And I think it's important that we as a community acknowledge what is going on and have accountability. And I mean that as a community, but I also mean as a city council. We have to have accountability at the city and acknowledge what's going on. And a lot of times people just skip over issues. You know, oh, well, we got Garden Hills going. Nah, you got neighborhoods even across the city that aren't in my district that are going to fall down if we don't have the correct infrastructure in place, especially the correct programs to make sure that places are in priority, or everything is going to be Bristol Place. And imagine if everything turns into Bristol Place and we have to put as much money as we put into Bristol Place to every neighborhood we let slip down. So those are kind of some of the things that are just super important to me.
And you were a part of one of your accomplishments was getting the new Costco store that opened in Champaign, which I imagine. Can I talk about that? Because that was a pretty big success with that brings in, you know, creates jobs for a lot of, I imagine, young people and students. But you'll just kind of talk about that kind of accomplishment, because that was a accomplishment that's been, I think, for the Champaign City Council.
Yeah, I mean, Costco is something I think we're all very proud of, not only because Costco was able to reside in District 1, which is typically, you know, we don't get new projects, you know, Southwest Champaign gets them. So to have District 1, I mean, to have District 1 be able to get that economic investment and the jobs, people say, oh man, Costco's here, we get jobs. Let me tell you about the jobs at Costco. They pay above minimum wage, and part-time workers are available for benefits and health insurance. That is so crucial in our community, especially since COVID hit us, that we are able to provide people with jobs that actually provide them with benefits. And a lot of people will tell you they work jobs where they're only giving you a certain amount of hours, so you can't get benefits. So imagine a company coming in saying, look here, you can work 20 hours a week. We're going to make sure you can go to the doctor. So Costco had me sold when they came in on that. And so that's something I'm very proud of. And I know the city council is very proud of, because we really believe we invested in not just economic development, but we really invested in our citizens. And I think that's super important.
Can you kind of, and you kind of brought this up at the People's City Council meeting about when you get elected to City Council meeting, and as you brought this up before, when it comes to really any kind of issue, the question is, you know, are you able to get your fellow City Council people to support? Because you need, what, at least 3, not 4?
You need at least 4 people. I would like to say, and I'm not a bragger because I don't like to take credit for things, but I think I've done a good job at getting the other council members to hear what I have to say and put up things that would benefit topics or things that, you know, I believe matter in District 1, but also matter across the city. And I'm very proud that every council member has always signed my study session request. For 6 years, when I put up a study session request, I can't remember one that wasn't unanimous. And I believe that's a testament to me challenging my fellow council members to see outside of their bubble and see outside of their vision. And I believe wholeheartedly, while I don't agree with some of the decisions they made, I agree wholeheartedly that they do want to try to be better to make everybody in our community feel like their quality of life is the same. And I think it takes a lot of working through those things and teaching, right? And so like We don't talk about how much we expect things from people, but you have to also explain to them why these things matter. And so people sometimes are like, man, you're always popping off. I'm not popping off, but if I don't say it in that space, who's going to say it? And so I believe that city council members have done a great job of giving me, you know, letting me talk and hearing what I have to say. And when it's time for them to sign a study session request or put lights on Bradley, they always come through. So I will give them credit for that.
I did read recently, and I don't know if there's anything that you had an update on COVID testing centers. I believe the mayor of Champaign talked about, you know, being able, giving people more access to, you know, I believe it was like saliva testing. I don't know if there's any information that you had on that. That was just I saw on the news Gazette.
No, I haven't heard of any, you know, any internal or anybody kind of working on the outside to try to get saliva testing for the public. But it wouldn't surprise me because, you know, the mayor is, that's how she would go and do stuff like that and work on something because she thinks it's for the best for people without really kind of like, you know, because that's just how she does things. So I could totally see her, you know, talking to the chancellor and being like, look, you guys are here. You're in the middle of our community. So it's just like a little bubble surrounded, you know, around us. We might as well open it to everybody. So I could totally see her advocating for that because that, to be honest, it's the right thing. You know, they're in the middle of the city and we're just going to test all of them and they're all their employees and they're in a bubble and the rest of us are just kind of out here. And I think saliva testing could really change for those disadvantaged communities who don't really, you know, believe in COVID and aren't really doing testing. I think it could really change, you know, their perception of the testing and the stigma of going to the doctor and waiting in line. And, you know, there's a little bit more of hurdle to that, especially in my community. So I think it's, you know, I think it's important that she does that. I'm proud to know that she's doing that because, I mean, it's going to benefit all of us in the long run.
And obviously with COVID, that's kind of putting, you know, now made a little bit things more difficult, obviously. And so as this weather now with voting, you know, there's now more focus for people to vote by mail. And how has that been? And I know there's, and I've been talking about this with other guests before you know, with this, I don't think with your district, do you have primary opponents?
No, I'm not in the primary. I just have, Champaign is bipartisan, so we don't have any primary.
Okay, so yeah, your election is April 6th?
Yes, it is April 6th, but early voting starts February 24th, 25th, and you can vote by mail, and you can, you know, take your ballot, go out to the Brookings Center. But we're hoping to do a lot more education in the community around mail-in voting and, you know, really push people to vote on April 6th if they don't feel comfortable doing the mail-in ballot. I know that some people haven't been getting their mail-in ballot, even though they've requested them for the primary. So, you know, giving the clerk's office time to kind of get those kinks worked out and stuff, I think could really make the April election much easier.
Now, I believe, has there been any kind of update on the process? And this was something I remember when I was doing some canvassing work for another candidate about the Fifth and Hill gas plant, because I know there was kind of some environmental issues going on there. And I remember talking to a constituent there, and I know there's been kind of a process of cleanup. Has there been any updates on that or any new information since?
No, I mean, you know, we as a city have to acknowledge what's going on at the site. And prior to me being on the city council and even after, I don't see any interest in our city staff in handling the, you know, the neighbors' concerns about, you know, Fifth and Hill. And I've went to the city council and I've talked to them about how important it is to talk about the concerns of that neighborhood and the fact that we've literally lost the core group of Fifth and Hill members have died. And, you know, that speaks a testament to a lot of their complaints and things they were talking about. And, you know, Ameren has slid by really easy on this and not had to take accountability for the site. And I know they're going to be doing some boring testing work here soon for a couple weeks. And I don't know what that's for. I don't know, you know, I don't know if the city is going to, you know, educate the public, but I'm going to push them to, you know, let the residents know what's going on. But every time this happens, it picks up the conversation. I want us to do stuff for our water ordinance. I believe it's essential. It's changing the way we do groundwater ordinance is essential to dealing with the Ameren problem. And our former public works director who recently retired, Dennis Schmidt, he very much was for doing something with that groundwater ordinance. So I think, you know, hopefully it's something that will pick up, especially since we know that Ameren's going to be doing some boring testing for a couple of weeks. I think that's going to get the neighbors to maybe start asking questions again, you know, because what happens is life happens, right? Like people get busy and, you know, COVID hit and, you know, so I really don't want Fifth and Hill to lose people's mind because this is people's quality of life and it's super important.
In terms of utilities, you know, protections and kind of, I believe they're, to kind of keep on the subject of COVID-19, which has obviously hit a lot of people very, very hard, and you know, they've lost their jobs. And of course, if they lose their jobs, they lose their income, and you know, they can't pay for things for like, you know, groceries, you know, bills, rent. What can city council do in terms of essentially helping its residents that maybe, you know, have been hit hard with COVID in terms of keeping their utility, you know, keeping their electricity, keeping their, especially right now with the winter, you know, harsh winter weathers? What do you think they should do anyways on just keep on making sure residents are keeping utilities and electricity, water on?
I think it's super important that we as a city tell Ameren and tell Illinois American Water that we do business with you, and you have to be here and you have to do stuff for our community. And until they can guarantee that they will not be shutting off power and shutting off water, we need to be making that difficult for them. And we did a little bit, but not to the extent that I felt like we could have. And I was very disappointed to find out there was a meeting of people, and there were attorneys on the call who said that we had no authority to make Ameren or the utility shutoff stop. And of course, because everybody on the call makes $100,000 an hour and $100,000 a year, and you know, well, we don't have the authority, just leave it alone. So it's okay for those people on the call to just throw away the idea of stopping these shutoffs and stuff like that. And that's why it gets frustrating to be in these places, because you should want to stop them from doing the shutoffs. It shouldn't take someone telling you that that should happen. And so it's been a frustrating thing for me, because I think that I know for a fact that both of our mayors from Urbana and Champaign got on the phone with Ameren and was able to stop disconnections once. So I think that they have the power to do that. Now, whether they feel empowered and feel confident enough in their abilities to do that is a different situation. But I know that they can do it. I know we as a community can do it. And I wish that everybody would get on board and, you know, really push that.
And kind of go back to the People's City Council. I don't think you got much speaking time. I think that was just because it was kind of first hour of that.
I purposely didn't speak during that forum, because I have a platform to speak, you know, on that topic regularly, and a lot of the candidates don't. And I knew that there was a police study session coming up for city council. So if you want my views or want to see what I was thinking, you're going to have to watch the city council meeting from this past Tuesday, because okay. I really explained myself and I talked about my issues. But really, you know, my main thing with the defunding the police conversation is that, you know, I serve a population that can't be without the police. We would be most impacted if there was less police resources. And we would, you know, my kids hear gunshots during all week. My kids can text me and tell me a gunshot before a firework, because that's what they've lived, right? Right. And so those are things that we actually need to make an effort to change. But I mean, it gets kind of frustrating. It's frustrating because people are usually impacted by the things they can see or touch that are tangible. And a lot of people just aren't impacted by this.
You know, I guess kind of the reality is, you know, the thing with, as I'm sure you know, Clarissa, you know, with local government, you're not going to satisfy everybody. You're not going to satisfy all your constituents. Everyone's going to have their opinion. And gonna usually stick to their opinion, and that's, I imagine, one of the, if not, I don't know if that's one of the most difficult things as a city council person, when you're trying to explain, look, this is the way things are, and you may not agree with it. You know, you may not agree with it. Can you kind of talk about that? How people to understand that, you know, when it comes to something as, you know, when you're in city council, as you said, you need for city council, you know, a majority, and to, you know, look at an issue. And also when it comes to how much support, even in your district, that it may not be something that realistically that you can.
So what are you saying more so? Like, are you talking more like getting, you know, political will on the city council with my fellow council members? Is that kind of what you mean?
Yeah. Maybe for people to understand if they think that, well, something needs to be done with police. And because essentially what you're saying is, look, we can't, you know, we need, you know, obviously we need police. We need police officers. We need, because, you know, think, as you said, there is, unfortunately, situations where police do need to be called. Is there anything that you would say to others who may not agree with that, but for them, you know, so you may not agree, but this is, hopefully I can get you to at least understand
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things I'm most proud of on the city council, and one of my city council members I'm most proud of, is Vanna Pianfetti, because me and her come from opposite ends of the spectrum, right? She represents District 5, very high income district. I represent, you know, the most low income. We have violence. Her biggest problem in her district so far has been their tornado, you know, ripping off people's roofs. And, you know, my biggest problem is that people walk outside and see dead kids on the street. And so being able to connect with her and getting her to see that was something that there are real problems and there are first world problems, right? And so by talking to her and teaching, you know, not, I won't say teaching, but talking to her and giving her the opportunity to learn instead of just accusing her of not understanding. And she has been the one that has come the farthest as far as speaking out and talking on things that don't really impact her district, but she knows I need the backup, or she knows my district needs the backup. And so that's one of the things that when I say, you know, you have to get along with council members and you have to work with them. You do. You have to. We're not best friends. We don't have to be best friends, but you have to be able to work together. And Vanna listening to me and hearing what I say has been one of my proudest moments on council, because like I said, we come from such a big, huge difference in the spectrum. And she really has impressed me. And that's just the honest to God. That's the honest truth.
I hope I, are you the first Black woman to be elected in District 1 and for Champaign?
No, Gina Jackson was on the city council at some point in time, but the district maps were redrawn. And so I don't know that she represented the district I represented, because they've redrawn the maps since she was on council. So her district probably looked different than mine. So no, but I am currently the only Black elected official in Champaign.
All right.
Black woman. And I'm the only Black woman incumbent on the ballot.
Okay. That, I guess that's what I was misread, because I thought that's different, but, I apologize about that. Speaking of, well, since we're on that topic, how can people figure out what district they, I guess they go to the Champaign website, but you know, with this is, I think the thing with local city council, people may not know where, who represents them in city council. And that means, well, who do I vote for when the municipal elections come up? And I know that that's kind of a worry about, you know, turnout. I guess essentially what I'm asking is, what'd be the best way for people to source that people can find who represents them? I guess there's the Champaign County Clerk website. I actually just went there to get my mail-in ballot, but to figure out who represents them.
So Facebook has this really cool feature where you can go and you can say, ooh, who represents me and what's going on with local elections? And that tends to give you, you know, you put in your address and they'll tell you, you know, who your representatives are. The Champaign City website has a beautiful GIS program. So we have all these maps that tell you different things that's going on in the city. One of them is a city council map. And the city council map will tell you all of your representatives for the city council, you know, from mayor to at large, and then your district reps. Based on your address. And the county clerk's office has I don't know if it's still there. It was there when Gordy Holton was here, so I'm not sure. But you used to be able to pull up and it would show you who all your representatives are. So it would show you not just local, like, you know, state, Congress, and stuff like that. But I'd always found that information prior on the county clerk's office. Now I typically find it on Facebook. And Google, actually, surprisingly, it's really good when you like, oh, who represents me? And they're like, boom, we'll tell you. So that's what I usually recommend for people when I'm telling them to, you know, to find out who represents them and to know, you know, kind of what's going on and finding out about, you know, the people.
When it comes to diversity, you know, it's important, you know, have diversity, because not only, you know, to have that, because when you are showing that, you know, you're representing a part of the community that's not represented. I talked this with Deshaun Williams, you know, not only are you bringing somebody who's not usually, you're bringing that different perspective. Can you kind of talk about perspective and your experience that you brought the Champaign City Council?
Well, one of the things that I like to tell people and I like to explain to them is that I was a teen mother who grew up in foster care, and my mother was a drug addict. I made, you know, having a baby at 15 and having a GED all the way to the Champaign City Council because of my community and because of the resources here. I made it as a young single mom who had three kids before I was 20 because of the resources in Champaign. And so I just want to continue to be at the table so other women black, white, so other women can know that no matter what happens in your life, little girls, wherever you come from, you can do anything you set your mind to. And so I want to be at the table because my experience as a teen mother at 15, you know, catching the bus with my son and going to work and going to high school, and my experience as a single mother with three kids before I was 20, and my experience as a mother of six children with kids in every building in Unit 4 really does bring me to have a different perspective that, you know, doesn't play out on the city council, because the city council is primarily conservatively white.
And obviously with Champaign, would you say that Champaign, it's a fairly conservative, I mean, I think it's fair to say, even though
Champaign is conservative. Yeah. Champaign is, most people don't pay attention, but Urbana is progressive. Urbana is a completely different world than Champaign. And most people I don't think that they realize that. And especially because of the emergency orders that went down in March, everybody was like, oh my God, the Republican-led Champaign City Council is taking our guns. They kept saying the Democratic-controlled Champaign City Council is taking our guns. Surprise, most of our council members are Republicans, but we have a black Republican. So go off though. You know what I mean? Like but I tell you, I also at the same time have to tell you that as much as sometimes things that they say kind of irritate me and bother me, they also do bring a check of a reality of what we're actually there for. And so whereas I would be like, man, throw all the money away and save the world, you know, I have to be, you know, so it's a balance. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I think it's a balance and it works. Do I want to see more, you know, people on the council who have a different perspective? Absolutely. But I also believe that the voters always get what they want in the end. And so if the voters want bobbleheads, they're going to get bobbleheads. And if they want real people, they're going to elect real people. And that is the beauty of our democracy.
For people or those who aren't familiar with city council, especially the Champaign City Council, could you talk about what being a city council member entails and kind of that whole process of what it's like being on city council?
I wish people knew more that, you know, we are all equal. We all have one vote and we all have to work together to make that happen. We're nothing like Urbana. Our form of government is completely different. We have a city manager who manages our day-to-day things, and she's the only employee that we actually direct. And so, you know, it's important for us to us as a community to know our forms of government and know that they're set up. And right now we have three different forms of government in Champaign County. So, there's that.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about, say about your, anything else that you think I'm going to, or any other issue that you would like to bring up?
You know, only one of the only things I really want to, you know, just explain to people is that, you know, I am the only black incumbent on the ballot. I'm the only black woman on the ballot. And I just want to continue to have a seat at the table to continue to provide a voice for everyone. That's all. And I really have enjoyed my time on the city council. But I've really only enjoyed my time because of the people I've helped and the people who I know I can look into their faces and know that I've changed their situation. And that is some of the things that carry me through terrible politics that I hate.
This is something I was, you know, kind of been reading. One of my favorite authors is James Baldwin. And, you know, I know it's February's Black History Month, but one kind of quote, and I think that's definitely true about politics, local politics. And one thing that James Baldwin says was, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's faced. And that's, I think, something that's very true about a lot of the, you know, our issues, you know, when it comes to healthcare, inequality, you know, wealth inequality, and, you know, affordable housing. I think that those are a lot of issues that we're still facing, and, you know, not brought up. These problems can't be, until they're addressed, nobody, you know, you have to first identify that there is a problem and then go there. And obviously it's a lot of them, it's a work in progress for a lot of these.
Well, and a lot of people don't understand that it's sometimes acknowledgement goes so far. I mean, just acknowledging that there's a problem. Nobody's saying that we want you to solve it and that you did something wrong or trying to be critical. We need you to acknowledge there's a problem so we can actually fix it. But we don't have a lot of accountability right now, especially when it comes to the police department, because I'm a city council member and I still don't know what happened on May 31st. And unless four of my other council members decide they want to know, I still don't know. And so it's little things like that that I believe require us to be accountable and acknowledge what happens and what we can do different moving forward.
Couldn't say it. Yeah, could say any better. Clarissa, thank you so much for doing this interview, and go out and vote. I believe pertaining with that People's Council meeting, that got more views than a certain person's district. It got more views than how many people voted in a certain district.
That's probably more, I mean, more people than probably ever voted in my district.
Yeah.
And that was one of the issues with, like, you know, people don't talk about as candidates for local parties. If you don't have a platform to promote yourself and get yourself out there, what are you going to do? And the local political arena doesn't want to provide a platform for anyone other than the people that they want in office. And so we had to find another way to promote ourselves, and we had to find a platform. And the fact that platform was successful and people did see it goes to show that you can be a candidate who doesn't fall in line and doesn't fall into party politics, and you can still get your voice heard. And so I'm glad we were able to find that platform, because I don't think if it wasn't for the people, city council and people putting that together for those candidates, you wouldn't even know about those candidates.
Well, Clarissa, thank you so much.
No problem.
A reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. And that concludes this programming of Where We're At here on 90.1 FM radio. Thank you for listening. Please stay tuned for more programming if you can. Take care and have a good night.
Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, an all-volunteer operation, is located at 116 North 1st Street in Champaign. Their mission is to feed the hungry of Champaign County 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Because 1 in 7 adults and 1 in 5 children in our county are food insecure, and because so many have lost their jobs or are experiencing a lack of resources during the coronavirus crisis, the need is right there. While the dining room is closed during this time, good nutritious meals and sack lunches are available for pickup at the front door daily. For more information, visit